Good morning. Today is Thursday, April the 22nd. Wow.
Oh, it's first.
Second. I can read a calendar. Can you?
Oh, yes.
Second. Right. Joining us this morning, noted calendar expert, Tom Mattson.
It's spring. Okay, that's close enough.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, huh? Got a little bit of fog rolling in, got a little bit of moisture happening this weekend.
Got a little bit of cool wind.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's welcome to spring.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got the roadies open. So who could ask for anything more, right?
I could ask for the blackberries to quit growing.
Yeah, but without blackberries growing, you don't get blackberry pie.
Yeah, but I also don't get cuts and scratches from trying to cut them all down.
Oh, I see. all right, the whining will now stop. Are you ready for this one? Why is a flag at half-mast used as a gesture of respect for a recently departed?
You kill me every time on these questions.
Oh, cool. That's a pretty bad pun, but I like that
because,
one.
Because I'll just say that because the flag at full staff represents everything good, and if something bad happens, it'll be at half staff. Is that close enough?
Well, if you're through in military, you would have gotten partial points.
I'm military dependent, but I wasn't actually military.
Warships of old flew their colors, the ship's flag, at the top of the ship's mast. After a naval battle, it was used to be customary for the defeated ship to lower its flag to half-mast to make room for the victor's flag above it. After this was no longer the custom, the lowered flag continued to be a universal sign of respect. It was used by ships passing at sea as a friendly salute, and eventually it became a gesture of respect for a worthy departed.
Sounds.
So I guess I'll probably have to put a flagpole extension on when it's my time.
I go the opposite way on that one.
Yeah, okay, fine. Oh, you mentioned spring. For a lot of folks, spring also means that the weather starts to change and we start to recreate a little bit more.
Yep.
For you guys and gals, though, that also means that a lot of the creeks and the rivers that are typically running high during wintertime are now back down, not only within their banks, but a little bit lower. And you start having these things called seasonal bridges. Where did that concept come from?
Well, it's been used for a very, very long time in this country. And it's basically when the water lowers and you have an easier path to get across the river by putting a low crossing, you do it. And it prevents having to travel miles and miles of distance to go around. Humboldt County still has two low water bridges that we operate. One does, in fact, require the installation of a rail car. The other is basically a concrete low water bridge that down in McCann that as soon as the water drops below, you can drive across. We don't have, you know, we have to grade the other side of the river for access, but the bridge stays there year round. Both of those bridges, though, are going to be replaced. They've been approved for funding to replace them with high-level bridges, so we won't have to have the low water bridges anymore.
So that means for most of us, a regular bridge?
A regular bridge that you can use every day. The community of you know, Holmes Larrabee, we rent a road from the logging company over the winter. It's about a 9-mile, really, really rough drive. We get it for $1 a year for access to the community. In McCann, we run a motorboat back and forth across the river in the winter so people can get to their homes and then back across the river to their jobs.
It's kind of interesting, the whole concept. I know that a lot of those have been there for a long, long time, and that's what was done the old days.
Yep.
Not so much so these days, but you still need to have somebody like a bar pilot, in effect, huh?
Well, yeah, they've got a lot of special training, but really, you know, it is technically a ferry by Federal Highway's definition. Humboldt County has a ferry service, but it's basically a 14-foot motorboat that goes back and forth across the Eel River.
So pretty shortly, you'll be out of that business, huh?
I'll be out of that business.
Now, putting in a seasonal bridge, do you have to go through all the EIR stuff and things that regular folks would have to?
No, because it's been going, we have to have all the permits. So we do have permits from Fish and Wildlife. We have Army Corps of Engineer permits. We have National Marine Fishery consultations, et cetera. Generally, the permit terms are about 5 years before we have to re-up it. And, you know, we live with all those conditions. You know, one of the conditions is when we can put them in and when we can take them out. It used to be as soon as...
Can or must?
Must. Okay. Can when it comes to be putting them in, must when it comes to be taken out. It used to be if the water was low, you could put the bridge in. Now it's, you know, the one in Holmes can't go in before June 1st, and it's got to come out by October 15th.
What's magical about the dates?
You never know when you're going to get a spring storm, and you've got the bridge down there, and even with all of today's technology, it's written into the permit. But in fact, you know, if we put it in earlier and we saw weather coming, we could always yank it before the river jumped. But that's, we're not allowed to do that. So
you don't want to chase it downstream
either. No, nobody wants to have to chase it downstream, especially if it rams into another bridge. Then we've got a cascade of problems.
Yeah, understood. Now, for blading the road access at either side to make sure that it's to grade, I would think that's a pretty straightforward process, but is that also requiring a lot of permits and things of that nature?
It has to be included in the permit because you're working within and below the ordinary high water level of the river. And once you're in that area, you're under, you know, our State Lands Commission has ownership of the lands and rights, and we have to get stuff from them. Army Corps of Engineer requires permits for anything under the ordinary high water level. And so, yeah, you're disturbing the natural riverbed basically by blading away the accumulation of and compacting it so vehicles can drive across it without getting stuck.
You mean the old moss and dead eel carcasses that have just kind of fallen apart?
All I can say is permits are required, and we do obtain those permits.
In a timely fashion.
Hopefully in a timely fashion.
Is it the same set of conditions, same permit for both bridges?
Very, very similar on both. The one that we install and take out, you know, there's date and flow requirements. So if the flow's at a certain point that's above our ability, you know, to put it in still, then we can't put it in. Or if it gets to a certain point towards the end of the year where it's climbing and it hits that level.
You get some early rains.
Yeah, then we have to pull it out.
Yeah. Is that an easy process?
For the rail car, yeah, it's really simple. I mean, you get an excavator and a loader and one picks up one end, the other picks up the other end, and off you go.
Oh. Film at 11.
Yeah.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson, Humboldt County Public Works Director. Tom, with the bridges, that's got to be kind of cool for a guy with your background to be able to build some bridges. But there are bridges, and then there are bridges.
Bridges, yes.
Yeah, we've got the bridges that are over the little sloughs here between Eureka and Arcata. Okay, we've got the bridge that's down at Confusion Hill. A little bit different magnitude on 101. So when you say bridge, and you're going to have two new bridges, what are you talking about?
These will be bridges. They are going across the main stem of the Eel River. They will be very long and very high up in the air. You have to be above the 100-year floodplain. We're looking at trying to
plus get the redwood trees floating.
Plus
yeah,
the
okay.
capacity
yeah.
of all the...
We've learned that one, huh?
Everything that comes down in the water at a 100-year flood. So it's got to be a very strong bridge because it'll be hit. You know, we're still in a preliminary design, so I don't know if there's going to be piers in the water yet or where they're going to be at. But they will be made...
Wouldn't you need to?
Well, we will, but that's why we're in preliminary design, not final design.
Yeah, but I would think, at either end, unless it's not up high enough, your ends are going to be in trouble too.
Yeah, but, you know, the ends come down on good solid land.
So you can suspend it with an arc?
Who knows what's going to be the final answer. This is actually contracted out to a bridge specialist because it's basically... It's beyond our capacity to design. This is very, very intense design. Now, the 20 or 30-foot slab concrete bridges across the sloughs, those are pretty simple compared to what we're...
Much more straightforward.
Much more straightforward. It's a concrete slab with a couple of foundation abutments, and boom, you're done. That easy. In fact, you can get the slab pre-made and delivered to the site, drop on the abutments, you're done. You're out of there.
How do you attach those? Are they pre-drilled or something?
Yeah, it's just like any other piece of concrete work that's, you know, prefabbed, a concrete building that has the prefab sides that come with all the catchments. You put it together like a Tonka toy.
Okay. It's just...
Legos.
Wouldn't have thought that would be possible.
There's a lot more technology out there today than there was in the old days when you had to build everything from scratch in the field.
Is it more affordable because of that?
It's...
Relatively speaking, of course.
Construction is very, very expensive. It's less expensive in most locations than to trying to build it and pour it on site. Because, you know, the slabs are pre-manufactured in a major factory. It's like ordering from Amazon. I want a slab 30 feet long by 24 feet wide with the abutments that will be set at this location and this location. Boom, they make the slab, they put it on a freight train and out.
Yeah, what do they put it on to make it?
Well, freight train, a boat to get it here.
Yeah, I suppose a barge would be able to.
Yep.
But it got to be halfway tricky once it gets here.
Yep.
Now what do you do?
When we had the PG&E rebuilding going on and they brought in their new burners, their trucks
were... Yeah, those goofy trailers?
Yeah, with, you know, 32 tires or something on them. You spread the weight. You figure out how to spread the weight so it doesn't damage. And they, in fact, came in on one of our roads in Fields Landing, and they put down at least a foot, if not 2 feet, of gravel on top of the road so it wouldn't damage the road. And then when they were all done, they took all the gravel back off and left us with our original paved surface.
You didn't get the gravel out of the deal?
We might have ended up with it.
Environmentally permitted use wherever it ended up.
Exactly.
Yeah. See, I can read your mind. So with that scenario, these two bridges, are they similar enough that you're going to be able to have the permitting process done parallel, or
yes.
Do you do one and then move on to the other?
No, we're looking at doing the environmental for both together, unless one hits a hiccup that isn't included in the other. If at that point we would break them apart. But our plan right now is just do one environmental document for both bridges.
And then you just do Project A, and then when it's done, you move on to Project B.
Yep.
How long does it take?
4.
Start to finish?
Oh, I was wondering if you're going to ask for what?
No, I figure...
Forever.
Oh, I see. I was thinking years.
It's about a 10-year process. By the time you get through all of the approvals and get the funding, those ones will be relatively expensive. So we have to come up with a financing plan, that will be funded through we'll get funding back eventually through the state. But because the state has $1 billion in bridge needs every year and only $350 million to spend on local bridges.
Use that word very advisedly, please.
Billion.
No, only.
Only. Well, when you have $1 billion in need and you only have $350 million, it's like saying, I want to buy that thing in the store for a dollar, but I only had 35 cents.
There you go. Okay.
So you have to finance that other 65.
Yeah.
So we will have to finance it over a period of, I think, 10 or 15 years, and then the state will slowly pay us back. But it's really, that's a lot of the projects we do our county pay up front. We get the money later. We, you know, recently got our last check from the 2006 storm damage from the federal government. So it can take some time to get our money back. But we are persistent.
But you have to finance it, huh? The county has to...
We will have to finance these. We have to develop a finance plan that gets approved by the state.
And then the state will reimburse?
Yeah, the payment back, the payback to whoever finances basically comes from the state.
So, okay.
So the state's going to say...
I'm getting lost in this thing a little bit because they're going to repay the entire amount.
Yep.
But they want you to put together a finance plan?
Yep.
Why wouldn't they just say, okay, here's the finance plan?
Because they'll be looking for... They're not going to come up with the finance plan themselves. That's for an outside bank or investment company to do. And what the state says...
So these are dealing with bonds and things,
yeah,
right?
And what the state will say is, we will pay you X dollars a year for this many years. What's your financing plan? How much is your interest over time, et cetera? And then all of that will get negotiated, and then we'll get the financing. We'll spend the money, and the financing company will get a check, basically, after it comes from the state back to the county every year. Then we'll just pass it right back through to the financing company.
So simple.
Very simple.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35 this fine Thursday morning with Tom Madsen. Smile when you say that, stranger. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Bay Bistro, and Randall Sand and Gravel. Tom, getting the materials for this stuff, you know, bridges. I mean, it sounds sexy, sounds fun. There'll be a shock and awe. Okay, the county's going to be paying for it initially. But you still got this thing called materials, raw materials.
Yep.
You know, we talk about what's going on in the building and construction industry. Raw materials is a big deal. You talk about the retail industry. They're getting shipped half to a third of what their orders are. Granted, we're talking 10 years out, 8 to 10 years out. Are there any concerns about the raw materials?
No, I mean... You'll always run into anomalies in the marketplace of things just vanishing from the shelves off the blue. But we'll have to look very, you know, as we get closer and the design gets closer and the plans get ready. You know, you really have to look at things like, did the engineer design something that we can't find?
That's in the plans early on. You're looking at things that are tough to find.
Exactly. Okay. And if there's anything specialty that has to be made or shipped, can the routes in here handle that piece of material? Suppose it's a steel reinforced beam that's 100 feet long. Well, you might not be able to haul that. You might have to break that down into sections. So you have to look at very carefully at the design and make sure you're designing with reality and concept. You're designing with what physically can be made, what physically is currently available. And if it has to be specialty made, making sure that, you know, you can actually get it to where somebody can actually build it and you can actually get it to where you need it.
I would think the same would be true with some of those cement slabs you were referencing in the last segment too.
Yep.
Can you get it there on the roads that are in place?
And with, you know, with the short cement slabs, that's really not that big a deal. But, you know, I've seen areas, you know, they were rebuilding a state highway bridge on the Feather River, where they had, I think, 87-foot-long beams that they had to basically haul in at night, close down the entire highway because the curves to get in there, their truck would need both lanes with that long of a piece of material. But that's what they did, and they figured it out.
It just that's what has to happen, and
you
probably can't helicopter those things.
Nah, either. Slightly a little bit too heavy for a helicopter.
Yeah, or you get a little wind going.
Yeah,
what clear cut? All those trees just kind of fell over.
Exactly. That's well, it's a tornado.
Are bridges legacy builders? I mean, are those things that are once a career?
Most of the time. Most of the... If I build any bridge while I'm with the county, the only reason I'm rebuilding it is if there was a major disaster. Most of our bridges are, you know, we've got a lot of bridges from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And most bridges throughout the state are that way. I mean, the Golden Gate Bridge is 1934. Bridges.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah. Continual maintenance. You know, they start painting on one end, and by the time they get paint done on to the other end, it's time to start over again on the first end. I mean, that's just the way it works. But, once you build a bridge, it's there for a very, hopefully over 100 years.
So, in addition to the new bridges, I mean, you kind of touched on some of the older bridges.
Yep.
Some of them are county.
Yep.
Okay. Some of them aren't county.
Yep.
Okay. The state of the county bridges, are there any of those that are, I'm sure everyone has an issue just because. I mean, it could be weeds growing in the corner.
Yep.
Okay. All the way out to this thing is crumbling and we shouldn't have people on it.
Yep. You okay. Hope not to get there.
So you set that aside. What kind of replacement schedule or beefing up? I don't know. Do you blow them off and start all over again, or can you reinforce the existing?
Well,
what do you do with an existing bridge?
Our bridges, the county bridges, are all inspected annually by the bridge engineers from Caltrans, and we get an annual inspection report that says, okay, these are the recommended things we need you to do, and they'll give us a time frame. And then we have to figure out, you know, how to fund that. We do have a special bridge crew, although it's only three people. That's all they work on is the bridges. Their job is to take those bridge inspection reports and get the work recommended done. We do have what they call bridge preventative maintenance plan funding, which is a bridge set-aside funding from the federal government, where we actually take the scopes of work that are in those inspection reports, we roll it into the grant program, and then hopefully they fund that. And most of the time they do. It's a priority for the federal and the states to fund the preventative maintenance because it is so much cheaper than building a new bridge. And so, you know, that we're not big enough to get to everything all the time, but right now I don't know. I think we might have one or two weight-limited bridges. One is waiting for a reinspection because we just did $500,000 worth of work on it, and the other was never built to the current standards, but it's really in the middle of nowhere, and it doesn't serve a lot of traffic, so it's not really a justification to go in. You know, you can get to the state highway from either side of the bridge. That's basically the same distance. The bridge is about halfway along the county road. So either way, you can access the state highway. So it's not like I'm going to go spend $20 or $30 million to upgrade that bridge.
So the weight limit sometimes is an initial design with the structure, but also if it is beginning to show signs of age, you start restricting the poundage.
Well, as it deteriorates, if you have to, we've had where we've had to restrict weights based on our Caltrans inspections. That's the Honeydew Bridge is what I'm talking about right now. It's in a rebuilding plan, but it also deteriorated to the point where it had weight restrictions. So we were able to get, you know, enough money to band-aid it. We're waiting for the final inspection to see if everything got taken care of and we can re-up it to legal loads. But we had to band-aid it and get it to the point because we're working through the bridge program. And again, it takes quite a bit of time to work through the program and get the money and get everything set up and make sure that you don't take a step ahead of yourself and give the state or the feds the opportunity to say, you screwed up on the process. Give us some money back. Bye.
That when it's weight like that, how do you control? I mean, if let's simple numbers, right? If it's 10 million pounds and let's say each car is 1 million pounds. Okay. Do you restrict the number of vehicles that are on there at one time? I mean, how do you do something like that to stay underneath it? Or is that just kind of like a recommendation?
Well, the weight limit is per vehicle. And I've never, ever had to limit the number of vehicles on a road. It's basically the bridge will hold a lot more weight than the weight limit on any given vehicle. But there's likely damage that will occur if you put more than that weight on a single loading.
So you play it safe. You dummy it down.
Everything in engineering has a factor of safety built into it.
Acceptable risk?
Factor of safety.
Tomato, potato, you know?
No, completely different thing.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson. Tom, the concept of these bridges and putting them in, I know there's a hoopla when they open up. Everybody gets excited and hooray, hooray. But the bridge used today is a little bit different. You got people who are trying to ride bicycles on bridges.
Yep.
Okay, well, there's certain types of designs that are applicable for that or not. You've got some of the cyclone fencing or containment.
Yep.
Fencing, I don't know what, again, I get lost in the technical, but basically keeping everybody on the bridge instead
yep.
of letting them jump off.
Exactly, safety.
Okay. Those types of things also, are there groups that are looking for that kind of thing to be sure that it's there, or is that just part of that initial design and or plan design that the architects come back with you and they show that, okay, we're going to put razor wire on this, or we're going to have sponge beds down by the riverbed so if anybody jumps, they won't hurt themselves. I mean, various things?
That's all in the design. The problem today is most of our bridges were built before those things were in the design.
Before people started losing their minds.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, bridge rails and the cyclone fencing, it used to be not a lot of people rode bikes across the bridges all the time. Well, now there's a lot of activity with bicycles riding across. And I know bridges in different counties where they're getting a lot of pressure to retrofit them because they're on now major recreational bike routes.
So widen the shoulders.
Widen
so
the shoulder, provide a separated, like on the Mad River Bridge, what Caltrans did on the Mad River Bridge, a separate path adjacent to the highway with a barrier between it.
It always seems to make sense to me. Why would you want to be riding a bicycle next to somebody going 65? It just doesn't freaking make any sense. Give me a physical separation.
Yes. Not only a physical a distance, but a barrier.
Yeah.
People make mistakes. How many times have you seen someone
mechanical
swerve?
Failure.
Well, and, somebody's texting and they swerve.
Or a flat tire.
Or a flat
deer.
Tire,
or who knows?
Deer, yeah. Too much alcohol. People naturally make mistakes, and the roads don't really forgive them. And so, in my mind, I like to have separated bike ped paths. Completely separated from the road. I think that's really the
barrier, or are you talking like space between?
Either way, a large space for recovery area, or more importantly, if it's near the road, some kind of barrier. Our Bay Trail design that will connect Eureka and Arcata will have a cable barrier where it's near the highway. So not just a space, but a physical barrier that's proven to stop vehicles.
Yeah, I would think for liability purposes, you would almost want that built in.
Yeah, it's...
All you need is a couple good lawsuits, and now your bridge is twice as expensive.
It depends. If you're following federal, state, and local design guidelines, there's a lot of design immunity for the professional sector because you followed all the standards. And if you didn't follow a standard and you didn't document why you didn't follow that standard, yeah, you've opened yourself up to a liability. But if you've followed all the standards or have good, solid, documented reasons for deviating from those standards, that's highly defensible in the state of California.
So you play by the rules, you have play a by the bit rules, of a shield.
And you've got a good shield.
So we're going to have seasonal bridges for the next decade still?
Probably.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll hear about it once the footings start getting poured.
If there
are footings.
There will be footings. It just depends where they will
be. All right. Well, we'll look for the map, baby.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by, Tom.
Thank you.
See you again. Bye. See everybody tomorrow.